Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast. There hasn't actually been a whole lot of international cricket played in the past week, but we're not going to let that stop us, and there has been plenty of off-field action, including hirings, firings, transfers, bans, and some amusing injuries. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by none other than Kumar Sangakkara. But first, a guest who's much more than just a warm-up act for the big man, Wisden staff writer and general manager of the mock Oval Invincibles team, Taha Hashim. Hello, Taha. What's your moment of the week?
Hi, Ben. Thanks for that intro. I don't know how Kumar's going to follow me up. My moment of the week was being sat alongside you yesterday at the mock 100 draft. A bunch of journalists were invited to Lords to sort of pretend to be GMs, you know. I mean, pretend to be head coaches and test out the software that they're going to be using on Sunday when they actually have the live draft. And you know, we made quite a few picks, and it was good fun.
Yeah, it's as well as the software. It's just kind of, I mean, I'd probably done less research than some others. I saw that some had picked out 57 names before the draft, and that this is just for a mock thing. But it was good to get an idea of actually just how it will all work. And I think until you go through it, you don't really realise some of the trends that are going to come up. So it feels, from having done it, like the first rounds are probably going to be dominated by overseas players.
Yeah, because for those first couple of picks, I mean, you have to spend $125,000, even if that player is not, even if a player you want isn't $125,000.
Yeah, the reserve price can be lower, but yeah, if they select in the first round, then you'll be paying them that much.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the trend that we saw was that people are going to go for those big names. Mm. So, you know, your first pick that we saw was Rashid Khan. Our first pick was David Warner.
Yeah.
I was very happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely started strong. I think that the reserve price psychology is an interesting one, because I think it's almost always been better to like give yourself reserve price. There's so many players in this draft, and actually not that many slots available. And especially with overseas players going early. So the highest reserve price for any English player is 60,000, whereas the highest for an overseas player is 125,000. And I think you saw with Sandeep Lamachan getting picked up, having put himself at reserve price of 100k, I think that probably did have an influence, just making people look down that list and see, oh, he's there. And hopefully, come the actual draft, there'll be more research than us. But that could well happen. Even someone like, is it Gareth Hart put himself at 40k?
Yeah,
and there's someone you wouldn't even think about. Like, oh, do I want Gareth Hart? And yeah, it's an interesting one. I think also it could be a tetchy watch, I think, judging from how we got on. I mean, we're two quite sanguine characters, aren't we?
But we didn't come to
blows, but you know, there was a few disagreements.
Yeah, things got a bit weird about, you know, when we started talking about Adam Rossington.
Yeah, no, I still can't hear that name without breaking into
really
a cold sweat.
Him. I mean,
yeah, I think the most important thing from the draft, or the most notable thing, was the mock draft. Sorry, was the technical problems that we saw. Like there was a few small things, like people's individual computers freezing or players not being able to be picked for a time, you had to refresh it, and that was sort of out. But there was about an hour where the mock draft had to be stopped because they were sorting some things out, and hopefully this will allow them to sort it out, whatever problems those are. But you really hope something that doesn't afflict the
draft
on Sunday.
They'll be having another dress rehearsal at the Sky Sports Studios on Friday.
Okay.
That will actually involve the head coaches. I don't know how that's going to go down. Whether they'll actually, you know, do the picks that they actually want, and you know, people have sort of an insight of what's going to go down on Sunday.
That's fascinating. So you could have Trent Rockets pick first and like, oh yeah, we'll go for Glenn Maxwell.
In the
mock draft, in their actual mock draft. And then
Sunday, totally switch it around.
Yeah, wow, Gareth, that's great. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. There was actually a little bit of international cricket played this week, India and South Africa. Test series between them was decided. India claimed an unassailable 2-0 lead. Virat Kohli made his test best score, his first 250 in tests. They're very, very good, and it didn't really seem like number one playing number three in the world, is it? It's really India daylight and then the rest, isn't it?
I mean, that's what happens when you tour India. Mm-hmm. This decade, I believe, the only side that's gone to India and won a test series is England back in 2012. Mm-hmm. It's a horrifying proposition for an away side to go to India and try and tackle their spinners, the heat, and then, of course, the relentless batsmanship of, first you had Rohit Sharma in that first test, twin tons, you have Mayank Agarwal who's you know, nailing it as a test opener now, and then of course Virat Kohli breaking his own records, his highest test score, an obscene amount of double centuries. It's a frightening frightening task, and it really crushes people's souls, as we've seen with the news today of Aidan Markram.
Well, yeah, yeah, he's a if you haven't seen the statement from South Africa is great. So he essentially he punched a wall because he was a bit annoyed with himself and broke his hand, and they phrased it as in a moment of frustration with his own performance, he lashed out at a solid object, resulting in his injury, which is so just even though it's all technically true, it does somehow moot it down. Tara, have you ever punched a wall in a moment of frustration with your own performance or otherwise?
I haven't yet. No.
Were you close to yesterday at the mock draft?
I mean, we nearly get to blows, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. Do I count as a solid object? Careful what you say.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely. Okay. Yeah, for me, the thing with that, the second test match is that actually it was South Africa's quicks were out bowled as well by the Indian quicks. And they've obviously, I mean, we know how good the likes of Jasser and Mohammed Shami are. Like, we kind of know it in our heads, but it's still in our hearts. You kind of think that on a green surface that South Africa will still find a way to get past them, and that's just not the case anymore. And you wonder if there was that test series at the beginning of last year that was played on some green mambas, I guess you'd call them, and South Africa had enough to get past India on that occasion. But now, if you played that now, I don't think they would. I think India would beat most sides in most conditions at the moment.
I mean, it's not just that they have a strong first choice 11 whenever they do pick the seamers. They've got quite decent depth now as well. I mean,
Umesh Yadav wouldn't be in that first choice team, would he?
Exactly. Just, of course, Bumrah is head and shoulders the number one, but then Mohammed Shami is a terrific bowler himself.
Ishant Sharma can kind of do it everywhere, yeah.
Ishant Sharma has been a revelation over the last few years. I mean, you looked at his career a few years ago and thought, where's this man going? But I guess, you know, the way they've rotated their quicks, I know the horses for courses policies has come under criticism sometimes for India, but in terms of their fast bowlers, I think it's worked a treat.
Mm, yeah, and this does, of course, mean that India have maintained their perfect World Test Championship record. I think if they win the final test of the series, they will have more points in the World Test Championship than all the other teams combined. which is quite impressive.
Well, Kohli has some interesting comments, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He suggested that away wins should count as double, which, considering India are the most home dominant team in the world, is kind of a maybe laudable thing.
It's a very dominant statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. It's like, yeah, we'll even if you kind of tie one hand behind our back, we'll beat you with the other one, kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. So a few the hirings and firings from around the world. The first one, Andy Flower has left the ECB. What was his eventual job title at the point when he left? Do you remember that?
Well, in the statement, they just said that he'd been coaching England Lions for the last few years. I mean, I've seen various titles for what he had, sort of technical director. But the actual statement that announced him leaving just said he'd been coaching England Lions for the last 4 years. It's quite curious. I mean, Andy Flower left. You know, he stepped down as England head coach at the start of 2014.
Yeah.
And he's still sort of been around, sort of like this lurking shadow. Yeah,
a slightly ominous
years.
Presence, hasn't yeah. he? And I think, I don't know if it's stopped England from like fully moving on from that era. But now, I mean, with a new head coach and Ashley Giles kind of stamping down his authority, I guess also a new kind of more junior head coach in a way as well. It's it's kind of all changed at the ECB, and it feels like very much Ashley Giles' organisation now, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's... you know, you imagine there's some sort of weird power dynamics there, especially with Giles' history, having been the ODI coach to Flower's test coach, and then suddenly becoming, you know, Flower's boss. It's a strange one, but yeah, 12 years. I mean,
and we shouldn't diminish his achievements as test coach. Yeah,
like I just said a few minutes ago, the only England side, the only side to go to India, win a test series this decade, England, Andy Flower's England. I still feel, even with the achievements of Trevor Bayliss winning the World Cup, Andy Flower is England's greatest ever head coach. What they did when they went to Australia, three innings victories to win that series, to go to the top of the world, to also, you know, England haven't always been a terrible white ball side before Trevor Bayliss. They won the 2010 World T20. And that was Andy Flower's side again. His achievements are extraordinary.
Yeah, okay. And then in other head coach news, Phil Simmons has been rehired as head coach of the West Indies men's team a matter of months after a wrongful dismissal claim that he filed against the West Indies Cricket Board was settled in his favour. So that's,
I mean, there's a terrific picture of Phil Simmons shaking the hand of one of the West Indies chief execs after the claim settled, and all smiles, and I guess they're smiling again now. He's back as head coach.
Yeah,
did all right the first time round. They won the World T20.
Well, he did. I think it was interesting because there is a bit of a managerial merry-go-round in international cricket, as there kind of is in kind of the bottom half of the English Premier League. And you kind of get the same names cropping up each time, and it's tempting to kind of view this in the same light, in that Phil Simmons is a guy who's kind of had a go and been fired and has like went to Afghanistan, and that ended in kind of acrimonious circumstances. But I think it's a really, really good appointment. I interviewed him when he was Afghanistan coach, and he doesn't give a lot away as an interviewee, but I think, and he does often come into like a Stetson or collision course with the authorities and the administrative bodies, but I think that's because of how closely he sides with the players. He's such a player's man, and I think he also gets them to believe in themselves sometimes. It gets them to believe that their proper team's worthy of greater things. So the Irish players talk about how he's a brilliant coach to go on tour with because he's so good technically, but he'll also not stand up for or not allow anything from the organised side. At some World Cups, you might get India get sort of one sort of team bus, and Ireland would get another, like slightly worse one. And in the past, coach would be like, "Oh, you know, it's fine. It's we'll kind of make do and mend kind of thing." And Phil Simmons wouldn't stand for it. I think he's an impressive bloke, and it'll be interesting, especially if he gets his 4 years in the job with quite a promising West Indies team, to see where he can take them. It should be quite exciting times for them.
Yeah, well, the ingredients are there in that West Indies team. They've had a bit of a strange year. They started it off with a Test Series win over England, and then had a pretty dismal World Cup. But the players, the talent, Hetmyer, Hope, Jason Holder, terrific all-rounder. Phil Simmons, I think you're bang on there. Phil Simmons is probably the right man because he's been around the block, and now he's probably got a better West Indies side than he had a few years ago.
So next on our list to talk about is the T20 World Cup qualifier, when we find out who the teams who'll be trying to take the West Indies crown off them will be. That starts tomorrow, ending a drought of 40 hours without any international cricket whatsoever, which we're barely surviving through. But a bit of sad news to start with talking about that qualifier is that a few UAE players have been banned from competing in the tournament and thereafter for spot fixing allegations, which it's not wholly unexpected, both on like a personal point of view. I think the UAE team were implicated in the Al Jazeera documentary that came out a while ago. But I think also it's inevitable in general, right? I mean, you've got these huge betting markets on cricket matches where the players themselves aren't earning anywhere near the amount of money that people are making off them playing. And these are people with, you know, families to support, often earning not much, not just compared to what other people are making off them, but in real terms as well. Like, it's going to end up that, like, heads will get turned, and that's going to happen until you start, like, having sort of a, like, paying people equally across the globe. Paras Khatka stepping down as Nepal captain, and he's had an incredible decade, and he's not quite the longest serving captain in international cricket. I think that's still William Porterfield of Ireland, but he's done an incredible job there. He's their first ODI centurion and their first T20I centurion. Did you know the story of their World Cricket League Division 2 campaign from last year, Taha?
No, enlighten me, Ben.
So this was to get to the Cricket World Cup qualifier, and so along the way they had a last ball win and a one wicket win, and then in the final game against Canada, which I think they might have had to tie it to get through, or as the game went on, because results elsewhere, it became they had to tie it to go through. But they were chasing 198, I think, and got to 148 for 9, so all out. And then Karen Casey and Sandeep Lamachan added 50 for the last wicket before winning it on the last ball of the game, possibly the most incredible finish in cricket history. Honestly, it's that good. And then that kind of team with like a, if Afghanistan were kind of the rising story of this decade, I think that Nepal are going to be that of the next, aren't they? And Paras Khatka will have had a a huge influence on their
I'll tell you a story. When I was a few years younger and doing a school project, I lived back in Hong Kong, and I have a fondness for that Hong Kong cricket. And I was doing a project sort of writing match reports based on scorecards of them playing in World Cricket League, something like that. And every time they played Nepal, I'd see this bloke, Paris Kadka. He's hitting runs. He's taking... Who is this guy? never seen him play, of course. You don't get footage of those... You didn't get footage of those games. But I just thought, this bloke's just incredible. Yeah. And so he's proved.
Yeah, and he's still delivering for them. I think so. Nepal, I guess that is one of the big stories this week, isn't Nepal and Zimbabwe have both been readmitted to the ICC, having been suspended.
Of course, yeah.
And Paris Kadka, I think, sees that as the start of a new era for Nepal cricket, I guess, and thinks that it should be someone else.
That's a very selfless sort of statement, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I've been captain for the tough times. Now the good times here, someone else do it. It's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah. And a few other bits of news from that ICC board meeting. The prize money for women's events has been increased. There's going to be an under-19 Women's T20 World Cup from 2021 onwards, I think, every 2 years from then on. And the big news is that the rule which allowed England to win the World Cup final, the boundary countback rule, has been scrapped. And they're now going to play endless super overs until you come out with a winner. Which is probably a good thing, and probably a good thing as well, because it makes everyone think that the result was illegitimate in some way, which is just quite fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when is this ever going to happen again?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It does. Yeah, it's like edging through first slip, a vacant first slip, and then putting a couple of slips in, isn't it? It's the chance is gone, hasn't it?
But I mean, I'm quite excited about super overs in group stages. Because, you know, why not?
We definitely love super overs now.
Yeah, totally.
Especially since England are apparently incredible at them. And a couple bits of county transfer news to talk about. Ravi Bapara has left Essex after 17 years of incredible contributions and joined Sussex. What do you make of that one?
Which is a bit sad, isn't it? I guess you kind of like the romantic idea of the one club man.
Yeah.
But I mean,
even Stephen Gerrard played the last year or so in the US, didn't he?
And that... are you basically saying Sussex are like the LA Galaxy?
Well, no, I think I'm saying that Ravi Bapara is Essex's Stephen Gerrard.
I think it's nice. I feel like that's probably a better way to go about it. Yeah.
I mean, what a way to go out as well with that the winning runs in that T20 Blast final, and then the wink and kiss at the camera, and then winning a championship.
Forget the runs. It was all about the wink and kiss. That was just.
Iconic. Instantly iconic.
I guess he should have just said, "There, I'm off now."
Yeah,
and that would have been quite the exit.
Yeah, I think if we're to be serious for a second, I think that T20 Blast campaign actually had in it the seeds of Bapara leaving, because he was pushed down the order, and I think didn't react well at first. He had to kind of sat out a few games when the move was kind of suggested to him, and obviously came back and was kind of player of the match every match from then on almost, but. I guess maybe he feels that he can possibly still be more of the main man at Sussex, playing week in, week out. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on down there.
Yeah.
And then another transfer news from Sussex. Rhys Topley has left the club, having signed with them in May or June, was it?
In July,
after, what, 5 stress fractures in a period of time. And I feel like Sussex probably took a bit of a punt on him and... possibly feel that he's now kind of like spurned them a bit. It looks like Surrey are going to be the club to sign him, which is, again, from a PR point of view for Surrey, is an interesting one, considering how much they pride themselves on bringing up young players. What have you made of it, I guess?
Yeah, weird one, but I mean, it's okay. It's slightly, I can understand Sussex being quite disheartened about it. Especially the injury hell he's gone through. But I guess it's a good story for English cricket anyway, though. Still, Rhys Topley doing so well when he came back for Sussex. And the fact that big clubs still want him. I guess that the guy's been through, you know, a lot. And I'd rather not put such a negative spin on it. Clubs want him. sometimes when people go through that many injuries, you think, oh, does anyone really want to take a chance on him? But people are, so maybe, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
And I mean, maybe we shouldn't look at county transfers in general as, like, I mean, a bit of scandal has got to be a good thing for cricket in general, right? I mean, it gets it talked about. It makes it seem like it shows the passions that still reside, that people feel for it, I guess, these kind of things.
You want county cricket to be a bit more soapy.
Yeah,
kind of,
exactly.
That kind of vibe, exactly, yeah. More sort of notes on Twitter announcing moves, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would like a spy scandal in the bushes, if possible. Someone out at Merchant Taylor's School, put Paul Nixon in the bushes, seeing what Toby Brennan-Jones' new variation is, would be incredible, I think. And it's what the English game is missing.
Yeah.
And yeah, also for Rhys Topley, as you say, a good personal story for him that he is still in demand. And I mean, he was showed promise for England for a time, and I guess it's not out of the question, considering the Blast campaign he had, that another good Blast campaign and then a good 100 campaign, and he gets back into that T20 World Cup side. Is there a timeline or not?
I mean, he's also so young.
Mm.
He's had countless injuries, but I mean, he started playing for Essex when he was about 16, 17. So, you know, he's been around a long time, but he's still got age on his side. And he's also quite a smart bowler. It's not really about being express pace. He's got good variations. There are quite a few options out there for England in terms of the T20 World Cup. They've got quite a few left-arm options as well. You think Sam Curran, you know, David Willey, Tamal Mills.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say he's, you know, right up there to get into that squad. Who knows, maybe Ravi Bapara continues his good form.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess let's talk about a bit of amusing counter transfer news as well, which is Peter Trigo is not going to Yorkshire.
The explanation for this is quite good, and I feel like you should.
I'll enlighten everyone. So when players have to fill out their form for saying they're going to be entering themselves into the 100 draft, they had to choose which club they're affiliated to, and Peter Trigo was released by Somerset end of this season. Clicks on the thing, unattached is right next to Yorkshire, and he clicked Yorkshire rather than unattached. So when the draft list was released and people saw Peter Trigo, Yorkshire, they sort of thought, hang on, has this happened on the sly? And they both kind of took to Twitter. I think Yorkshire thanked him for his very brief stint at the club, which was quite amusing. But yeah, it's a funny one around, I think.
I think I saw a couple of people giving the 100 website some stick for it.
Yeah, they can't win, can they?
Yeah, I know.
Peter Trigo just filled in the form wrong. We've all done it.
Yeah. I mean, there's other aspects of the 100 website that can deservedly get some stick, but
yeah, but not,
I mean, you should
not.
You should let them off on that one, I reckon.
Yeah, okay. And I guess, having spoken about serious transfers and serious injuries, we can talk about another amusing injury as well, which is Mitch Marsh, like Aidan Markram, punched a wall and broke his hand. And whereas the South Africa statement was kind of like amusingly vague, what Justin Langer said to him was amusingly to the point where he just said, Mitch said he just told me I'm an idiot, basically, which does sum it up, doesn't he? And I guess the other thing with that is Tim Payne had said back in September that Marsh was looking to take inspiration from Ben Stokes and has now punched a wall and broken his hand.
He's done it, yeah. very Stokesian.
Yeah.
I kind of just, I feel for Mitchell Marsh, man. He just got back into that test side at the end of the English summer, and now he's, you know, 6 weeks out or something like that.
Did all right in that Shield game as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But we shouldn't feel too disheartened, because he is going to win the 2023 World Cup in an amazing Super Over, and probably the third Super Over of the game as well, if the new rules anything to go by. Yeah,
absolutely kill it in an Ashes test as well.
So from the ridiculous, I guess, to the sublime, we're now going to bring in Kumar Sangakkara, the new president of the MCC and the man with more international runs than anyone else except, of course, Sachin Tendulkar. While we were recording last week's podcast, Sri Lanka were just in the process of securing a 3-0 T20I whitewash over Pakistan, the number one T20 side in the world on their own turf. Feels like the latest in a string of positive results for the side, I guess. They beat or drew with New Zealand, overperformed in the World Cup, perhaps. Where do you see the side going?
Well, it was a new side that went to Pakistan. Quite a lot of new faces, a new captain. It was really encouraging to see them beat Pakistan, as you said, the number one ranked team. They had some great performers. Bhanuga Rajapaksa as a batsman, Banidu Hasaranga as an all-rounder, the new captain, Dasun Shanaka. So a lot to like And Danushka Gunatilaka was also very, very impressive. So you have the core of the team. A few of them didn't go. And I think these youngsters can be added around that core to really, you know, have a good, strong team going forward. They're still young. They need to be given consistent opportunities so they can perform and again be a part of a winning side. So it's going to be a long-term process. And they need to have the backing of the selector so that there's an environment of trust. And that will bring about consistent performances.
We should talk, I think, about why those players didn't travel. So the likes of Tassara Pereira, some of the other senior players, over the security threat in Pakistan, I guess. So you were part of the team in the test match that was abandoned in 2009. Is this a decision that you understand? Can you see why the players chose what they chose to do?
Security is a lot about personal comfort as well. It doesn't matter how many times someone tells you it's safe. You have to be able to make up your mind to go. And I'm very, very glad that a lot of the players did, because it is an important thing to be able for cricket to return to Pakistan. It is also imperative that the home government and the home board does put in place the necessary security measures to ensure that tours go ahead without incident. And even the MCC has been talking about a tour to Pakistan, and we're just awaiting security reports, so on and so forth, to ensure that, you know, it is secure and that particular tour can go ahead. And I'm looking forward to going back to Pakistan as well. But, you know, having said that, again, what you will find is around the world, you know, there are instances when people feel threatened and unsafe. It is not just in Pakistan. And it is, again, the measure of the contingencies in place and also the attitude of the people as well to decide to live their lives as they should.
Yeah, and as you say, it's such a personal choice the players have to make if they feel safe or not. And so you can have kind of all the security and the safeguards in the world, but it's these statement tours in a way that are going to be what players look at and feel.
Absolutely. The initial foray is so important, mm-hmm. because the feedback from that, the confidence, the feedback, you know, inspires. You know, players coming back and sharing their experiences, you know, it's the same for a visitor to a country as well. It's about, you know, going there, experiencing it, taking that positivity back, telling your friends and family about it, you know, putting it on social media, encouraging other people to come and, you know, share that experience. All of that is really important in actually setting the stage for other tours to Pakistan, so on and so forth.
Yeah, okay. And is that something that you feel like it's would have been benefited a lot by this tour, like the words like presidential level security of what people have said? So do you think some of these players might choose differently next time? Is it progressing towards?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have no doubt that they will. You know, discussions about that will always be ongoing. And decisions will be made, you know, as players see fit, as home boards see fit. But I see this as a very, very positive first step.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, it's not obviously not just a Pakistani problem. Terrorism happens around the world, and I know that you're part of the effort to kind of is rebuild tourism in Sri Lanka. Is that the right phrase to use after the attacks?
Yes, rebuild would probably, or revitalize, mm-hmm. would be probably a better word. We still have, you know, quite a few tourists coming. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I saw firsthand so many more tourists on the roads, walking around, you know, experiencing Sri Lanka. And that was wonderful to see, not just in Colombo as a capital, but also down the southern coast, because the season for the southern coast is just about to start. So it is important that message is carried across. And also the fact that Sri Lanka is absolutely safe and secure and ready to welcome more and more visitors from around the world. And it's especially relevant to the UK market, our third biggest market in terms of tourism. 225,000 tourists from the UK come there. We have a huge amount of expats who still live in Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. And they have lived there for many, many years, through the good times and the bad. England is going to tour next year as well in March, so that's a great way to highlight not just cricketing ties, but also the country to the tourists that will follow the tour. So, you know, I'm just here to encourage the tourists from the UK and around the world to come and experience Sri Lanka, because there's so much to do, so much to see. And a lot of people over the years have associated Sri Lanka with tea and cricket. But that is just not the case. You know, you can, yeah, you know, you want to visit historical sites, World Heritage sites, you know, sites that are 2,000 years old or plus. You want to see wildlife. You want to see blue whales or dolphins. It's just immerse yourself in just the natural beauty of the country. It's very diverse, very unique, and absolutely stunning.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, have you just started as president of the MC SOAR? Is that just about to happen?
Or
is
I took over on the 1st of October.
Okay, so you've just started there. Do you kind of see, as the first non-British president, do you have a responsibility to take a more kind of international view?
I think MCC is a global cricket club. You know, it's got 18,000 plus members, over 5,000 associate members, not just from the UK, but also from without. So it's really important that the club keeps understanding, yes, it is a private members club, it is a cricket club at heart, but its responsibilities are to the game at large and to cricket in terms of world cricket. Guardians of the spirit, guardians of the laws, and at the same time, in times like this, with, you know, so much spoken about Test cricket being in strife, to take the leadership along with the ICC to positively influence the growth and the sustainability of every format of cricket.
Mm. And I know with the American presidency, they talk about the first 100 days being when you actually get all your work done. What's your kind of your main goals for your first period in office? Yeah, I guess
I'm sure it won't be as volatile. Fingers crossed. But it's again to focus on the connection of younger fans, different communities in the UK with cricket, and of course the global legacy tours, and to keep Lords at the forefront of being a nurturing ground for talent across the world to come and foster that talent and display it to the world. I mean, from Afghanistan to Ireland to Nepal, all of these countries have benefited hugely from the exposure that Lords can give, its facilities, the MCC Foundation. So there's a lot of work, good work that it's doing, and more work to be done.
Yeah, and I guess the MCC's role as a sort of guardian of the game as well feels like now is a particularly volatile time, perhaps. Maybe volatile is not the right word, but you have these new formats coming up. You have people kind of questioning the sort of the long-term existence of Test cricket and that sort of thing. How do you kind of see, I guess, in terms of the 100, the T10, how do you see them fitting into the puzzle, I guess?
Well, I think the vindication of the 100 will be in terms of delivery, ensuring that the cricket's of the highest standard. It connects with the communities across the UK. It connects with the young urban fans. We have so many diverse international stars coming and playing. And that it's a format that it's easy to understand, it's exciting, and it really inspires the younger generation to take up watching the game and actually playing it, both boys and girls. And I think it's a really exciting time. Volatility is not always negative, and I think in this sense of the word, in this context in terms of cricket, volatility is very good, and it actually challenges institutions such as MCC, such as ICC and all home boards to really up their game.
Thanks very much for joining us, Kumar.
Thank you.
Back in the studio with Taha. Taha, you've, having done the mock 100 draft, you're doing the proper 100 draft on Sunday. Are you looking forward to it?
You know what, I actually am, because I kind of have an understanding of what is going on. I went to the CPL auction, a CPL draft, a few months ago, and as anyone who's been there will tell you, you have no idea what's really going on. Someone keeps announcing things, but they've got a camera on a few people behind some computers, and things just get shouted out. The 100 draft, I feel like there's some structure to it, and I guess having seen the picks that were made yesterday, we've got quite a bit of an understanding of what might actually go down. A few big names are going to miss out, I think. I mean, they will. But yeah, I am excited to make the trip down to Sky Sports Studios.
Well, that's the thing. I think the Sky thing is important. It's not just going to be a live stream on kind of the ECB site. You're going to have a...
There'll be razzmatazz to it.
Yeah. Who's it? Ishiguro and Ian Ward are the two presenters.
Mark Wood is commentating for the BBC.
And in the draft
and
himself.
In the draft himself.
Yeah, he might have to commentate on himself not getting picked up in the draft. Oh, he probably will get picked up.
He will get picked up.
But either way, his reaction will be on to follow. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like we're getting a bit swept up in the 100 now. And I kind of think this might be how it happens for a few people, that as the kind of the details get clarified and people realise the cricket's going to be really high quality, yeah, and that it's going to be quite a cricket, but that also the innovations are actually innovations. The 10 ball overs are quite interesting because you might have people bowling 20 out of the first 25 or 20 out of the last 25 or what have you. There are, I think we shouldn't lose in this, the concerns that people have about the 100, which is about what it could do to the county game, that this could be the move towards 8 super counties and the rest kind of thing. But also we do have to look at it as a legitimate cricket tournament, which is what it is, as well as looking at the implications of it, I guess.
Yeah, and when you see those names come up, you know, Warner, Rashid Khan, you know, that if you're a cricket fan, you're going to get, surely you're going to be a bit excited, regardless of your reservations. And yeah, I guess it is the fact that it is becoming real and we're getting closer to actually seeing cricket rather than just general marketing chat and all that kind of thing and launches and all that kind of thing. Yeah, you mean it's becoming easier to look forward to it.
Good. Well, I think that's a nice note to end on. Taha, thank you very much for joining me. This has been the Wisden Cricket Weekly Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends about it and subscribe.